A benign weather forecast for the next few days encouraged us to head for San Francisco. With light winds, low clouds, and full of nervous anticipation, I steered for the ocean with a push from the early morning tide. Hours later, we sat at the entrance to the strait with our sails hanging loosely, like laundry on a line. Then the tide began to come back in, carrying us with it. To avoid getting swept past our starting point, Garth turned on the engine, and we motored southwest several hours further into the ocean. We had 2 months to get to San Diego, where we planned to join a sailing rally to Mexico. But at this rate, we might have walked there faster. Daylight slowly faded, and lights appeared on shore 5 miles away. I imagined people going about their business, the thought of friends and family crawling into bed for a full night's sleep, while we alternated sleeping in 3-hour shifts, made me wonder about the sanity of our plans. Especially when Garth went down to get some sleep, leaving me in charge in the darkness. I had only the stars and a distant AM music station for company. I needed to make sure we didn't hit anything and ensure that we sailed in the right direction. For the first hour, I worried about all the lights on the horizon. I hadn't known any boats were there before it got dark, and I didn't know how far away they were. I had confidence in my million candle power spotlight. While it blinded me, I could at least point it at anything that seemed close, and then at my sails, to pantomime, "Hey you, over there! I'm here, and I'm a sailboat!" As darkness descended, so did the temperature. Despite it being late August, it didn't take long to get chilly. Every few minutes, I wanted another hot drink. Never a big coffee drinker, despite living in Seattle, the coffee capital of the world, I started to worry whether we had sufficient hot chocolate mix at the rate of 4 cups per hour to reach San Francisco, some 800 miles away. Then I became acutely aware of the downside to consuming all that liquid. Every 20 minutes or so, I peeled off waterproofs and 3 layers of fleece to reduce the pressure on my bladder. Each visit below to the bathroom took an extra several minutes for disrobing, which did help pass the time. Rarely had I studied a clock more closely. So much time just to think was a bit unsettling. I realized how much of my life I'd spent rushing around doing things that had seemed vital, most of which I couldn't even remember at the moment. The waters slapped lightly at the hull, and the lines groaned in their blocks, but we were ghosting along almost silently in the darkness in our own little universe. Still not used to sailing at night, I feared that a reading light would wreck my night vision. Fortunately, that fear was short-lived. Later, I blew through stacks of books, relishing the luxury of so much time. I huddled under the dodger, struggling to stay alert, while a mechanical wind vane steered a better course than I might have. The wind vane left us free to move around or visit the bathroom. We had nicknamed our wind vane Jacques because it came from Montreal and because occasionally he became finicky when the winds changed. Fortunately, he didn't demand coffee or cigarettes, which earned him my respect as a valuable crew member. When Garth took over at the end of my watch, I had the luxury of snuggling under the covers for some long-anticipated sleep. Once allowed, of course, sleep eluded me. I must have drifted off at some point, because I awoke in a panic, sure that I was sleeping when I wasn't supposed to be. My off-watch was all too short, and as soon as I was again in charge and Garth slept, I had no trouble relaxing into a comatose state. "Having a nice nap?"